Well, you can think of it as a modern-day treasure hunting form here, geocaching. It's all around us, and there are caches in, I think, maybe all, well, most, let me say most Wisconsin counties and state parks. And today we'll talk about geocachers, people who hunt for hidden objects with the help of GPS coordinates. Larry Mueller here, thanks for joining us. And great to have Carson Monroe back with us. He's the former president of the Wisconsin Geocaching Association. What's your handle, Carson?
My geocaching name is Acme Wildcachers.
Acme Wildcachers. In the geocaching world, that's what he's known as. And I'm wondering, do you geocache around the state? Let us know what you like or about it, or maybe tell us about some of your favorite spots. What are some of your favorite experiences you've had while trying to locate a geocache? Or maybe you want to know the ins and outs of it. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Carson, again, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Geocaching is described as a real-world outdoor treasure hunting game. What are geocachers hunting, and how do they locate it?
Well, each geocache is some form of container hidden somewhere in the world. They can be big, they can be small, really anything in between. I found ones that are about the size of the end of your pinky finger. I've found geocaches that are big enough to walk into. So it really depends on what the owner wants to put out in the world for other people to find. And as for how you find it, most people these days are using a smartphone, but you can also use a dedicated GPS receiver device. Those work as well.
Yeah, the phone, though, works pretty well?
Absolutely. Yeah, these days, the GPS receivers in the phones, they're just as accurate as pretty much anything else. They'll get you to within about 20 feet of the coordinates. Of course, 20 feet of the posted coordinates could be 20 feet off for the person who hit it and then 20 feet off for you. So it's not perfect, but it'll get you close.
Yeah, and you've actually walked into one? There was one that was that big?
Yeah, there are owners that will have like a shed on their property that the whole thing is like the geocache, and there's a big log, like a big visitor's logbook and other swag trade items available in the shed. I found one in Oregon that was in the porta potty. So, yeah. You see all kinds of things.
Well, talk about some more of the common things that people might find in a cache.
Yeah, so every physical geocache should have a logbook to sign, and that's how you prove that you were there. And then ideally, you also share about your experience by logging the cache on the geocaching.com website so that other people can see and read about your experience. That also gives a notification to the owner that someone has found it, and they get to see whether you enjoyed the experience or not. You can also report if there's a problem in the cache. So every cache has to have that logbook that you can sign. Larger caches will also have trade items in them, and they're usually not expensive things, small trinkets. Some people will make signature items to put in a cache to represent themselves. Sometimes they're small coin-like items called path tags. Other times it might be wooden nickels, or you know, they make fridge magnets or any sort of small item that's likely to fit. But usually, caches that are large enough will have some degree of trade items. The other thing that you might find in a cache are trackables. These are items that are designed to move between caches and be taken out of one cache and placed in another. And those can also be tracked on the geocaching.com website so you can see where they've been in the world.
And so if you're going from one place to another, then is it close by or is it?
It depends. Could be very close by. Sometimes people move them from state to state or even country to country in one hop. It really just depends on the cacher and where they're going to be geocaching.
And basically what you've just described, are those the rules? Are there other rules that?
There are a set of guidelines that Geocaching HQ publishes for the rules of the road, so to speak. And then there are a series of local volunteer reviewers that sort of enforce those guidelines and make sure that new geocache listings meet those guidelines. So things like you need to have permission to place a cache on whatever property, whatever place you're putting it. So sometimes that's easy, you know, in the city of Madison, for example, public city of Madison parks, geocaching is allowed within a series of guidelines that the Parks Department has established, and those are available on the Parks website. There are certain places they don't want caches to be, but in general, it's allowed, and you don't need explicit written permission. If, however, you're going to place a geocache on private property, you need to show that you have permission from the property owner to place that cache. Similarly, there is a general agreement with the Wisconsin DNR that if you submit a submission form, that caches on DNR-owned land are allowed as long as you notify them that you're placing one, and then they reserve the right to ask you to move it if there's a problem with the location or something like that.
I wonder about something like the Shawangunk National Forest, which is federally operated.
Yeah, the rules there are different, and national parks often do not allow physical geocaches. I would say most of them do not. There are a couple of cache types that are allowed, though, where you don't place a physical container to claim the find. Those are earth caches, where you learn a geological lesson and answer questions about a geological feature. Could be waterfall, a bluff, you know,
yeah,
all kinds of things. There's also a virtual cache where you're not allowed to place new virtuals in general anymore, but there are virtual caches in a lot of those national parks where you go to the place and you answer a question about something. It's not necessarily a geological lesson like the earth cache, but still something to find. And the other thing you can do is you can use cache types like a multi-cache or a mystery cache where you take a person to a location where they gather some information and use that in combination with info from the cache listing to find coordinates that are not in the park. So you might highlight something that's in the park, but then the actual final hiding place is somewhere else where that cache placement is allowed.
How did you get involved in or interested in this, Carson?
Yeah, so back in probably 2005, around the time I moved to Madison area, I was listening to a podcast, which was itself kind of new at the time. It was a technology podcast, and they were talking about geocaching. They didn't describe it very well, but I was interested enough to go do a little research on my own, and I thought, wow, this sounds kind of fun. I'd kind of like to try it, but I didn't have a smartphone even at that point.
You're right.
And really nobody did.
Yeah.
And so my wife bought me a GPS receiver device for Christmas, and that was the impetus to let us try this. And so we had fun finding them occasionally over the first couple of years, and then we had kind of a lull period where we didn't find very many, and we had some children. And in 2016, when they were young and I was trying to think of things to get them out of the house, geocaching popped back into my mind, and I said, hey, we should go try this with them and see if they enjoy this like I do. And that sort of reminded me that I really enjoyed it. And since then, I've been pretty active. So
yeah,
for the last 9 years or so.
Your former president of the Wisconsin Geocaching Association,
correct,
which I went on the website. It's amazing the number of spots. But tell us about the association.
Yeah, so the WGA has been around since 2002. And the WGA is really about promoting geocaching in the state of Wisconsin and making sure that geocachers can enjoy the game and that we are able to establish partnerships and agreements with landowners and parks divisions and things to make sure that geocaching can thrive, but also be respectful to the land and the areas where we play our game.
And as I looked at the website, I saw a map with that looked like the whole state of Wisconsin was covered, pretty much.
I am pretty confident there is a geocache in every county in Wisconsin, at least one. Some of them are pretty sparsely populated with caches because there are Native American reservations that may not allow caches in some areas. But I'm pretty confident that every county right now has at least one findable geocache in it.
Have you created your own geocache?
Yes, absolutely.
what was that like?
It's been an interesting experience, and I've put out a fair variety at this point. I've also adopted some from other players who either one passed away or needed to get out of the game for other reasons. So I have a variety. I think my favorite caches to create are those that have a little bit something extra about them. So I have one in Blue Mountain State Park that requires some tools to sort of lift an internal container up through a pipe connected to a tree to get to the container where you can then sign the log. And I had one also there that someone actually took it, which was pretty disappointing, but it involved an Etch-a-Sketch and a birdhouse. But yeah, that one's gone at the moment. I've thought about trying to rebuild it a little closer to home.
Is that a problem? I mean, you're supposed to leave the cache.
Yeah, it can be a problem. One of the things I try to do is secure my caches when I can. Now, the one I was just talking about that went missing was not locked to the tree where I had it. And perhaps if it had been, it would still be there. So sometimes I will secure that. But also part of making sure caches don't go missing is being smart about where you place them. You don't want them to be in locations where just anybody will stumble across it, because if they don't understand what it is, they're probably more likely to take it or think it's something nefarious. The other thing you can do is, and what I try to do, is put an explanation of geocaching in every container so that if someone does stumble across it, they can understand that it's part of a game and it's supposed to remain. Of course, things still happen, but yeah. Most of mine I've had pretty good luck with the locations I've chosen.
And you mentioned tradables.
Yeah, the trackables.
Tradables?
The trade items and trackables, two different things, yes.
So what are the describe that.
So for the trackables, they can really be anything. I think the original trackable were dog tags attached to an item. And usually it's just like a little figurine or something. But they can be anything. Usually small, because smaller means you can put them into more caches, make it easier to move them around. And some geocachers will put out caches intended to be a holding place for those kind of trade items. Usually they're called travel bug hotels, because travel bug was kind of the initial trackable type. And some people really like to move those. Other people don't really deal with that aspect of the game. But that's one of the things that I like about geocaching, is you can sort of pick and choose which aspects are for you. Myself, I like almost all aspects. But some people, they really focus on certain types of caches and they ignore others. And that's totally fine.
Yeah, it is. Carson Monroe, our guest today, former president of the Wisconsin Geocaching Association. He's known as Acme Wild Cachers in the geocaching world. I hope you'll join in. Are you a geocacher? Give us a call with your experiences, or maybe you've got a favorite you like to visit, or just a question about it. The number to call, 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, Lindsay Hendrick is back to give us an update from the Green Bay Botanical Garden, and then we're going to talk about how AI is being used to sell fake plants. And then we cover all you need to know about growing a beautiful iris. So that's tomorrow. Right now, though, we're talking geocaching with our guest, Carson Monroe. He's known as Acme Wild Cachers in the geocaching world. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. Let's take a call from Mike in Fond du Lac. Mike, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to mention that biking, especially like bike trails and the parks and bike routes in cities, are excellent places to find geocaches. And I think I've found 5,037 or something like that. I started it when I retired in 2007, and I've probably found 300 or 400 per year, the first few years anyway. The trackables, by the way, I have not seen much lately. used to see them quite often. I wondered if there was some issue about them and if they're disappearing or what, because I don't see them in the catches very often.
Thanks for calling, Mike. Go ahead, Carson.
Regarding the trackables, I do think that they're probably a little less common than they used to be. I think the trackables, because they're designed to go in and out of caches, a lot of times they end up in the bottom of a backpack and they get forgotten and just go missing, right? So I think that some people have recognized that it is a challenge to keep a trackable going long term, and they have decided that it's not worth the time and effort. A lot of people will also buy a trackable and then put out a proxy in its place, so they can keep it going longer. If it goes missing, they can put out a new proxy in its place. But I agree, trackables, I think, are not as popular as they once were, and part of that is just that it's hard to keep them going for a long time.
Yeah. Well, Mike, it sounds like you've had a lot of fun with geocaching on your bike.
Well, I would say it fits well with biking because, you know, even if you're doing what we call park and grabs, which I'm sure the author knows about, where you just stop every every tenth of a mile and pick up another easy one from a roadside sign or something. On a bike, it's a whole lot easier than reparking and reparking all the time.
That's true, and you can cover a lot more ground on a bike. I do also like to bike for caching.
Mike, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. So how many caches do you think exist in Wisconsin?
I suppose
it's hard to know.
I think there probably are some statistics available somewhere. I would say in Madison area here, Dane County, there's over 1,000 for sure. Probably 1,500, 2,000 something in the county, in Dane County. So we obviously have a larger population here. There's going to be more caches here than there will be in some of those more rural counties, but it's several thousand for sure in the state of Wisconsin.
I'm wondering, can they be found, or do you find them in cities like?
Absolutely, yeah.
Madison again, or Milwaukee.
Really, the only requirement for where is you need to have permission, right? And be confident that it's a good place to hide the cache. But there's lots of them that are just available walking down the sidewalk in Madison or other cities. So they're not always in parks requiring hikes or biking. It really depends. There's a wide variety available.
Yeah, but then you have to sign a you would have to have, I mean, you can't put it on a lamppost.
Well, actually you can.
You can.
Yeah. So there's a couple different ways you could do that. The really small containers, we call them magnetic nanos. Those are the ones about the size of the tip of your finger, and they have just a teeny tiny log roll in the cache. Those are pretty easy to hide because they're very small. But the other thing that is really, really cool the first time you ever find one of these, but is less inspiring, let's say, after that, almost all lampposts have a skirt that covers the bolts where it connects to the footing, the concrete footing, right? That skirt lifts up, and there's a cavity in there that's perfect for hiding a cache, a small container. So those are all over the place.
Well, you've just given a tip to a lot of potential.
Yeah, if you've never found a lamp skirt geocache, now you know.
Yeah.
Or we call them an LPC, a lamppost cache.
Oh, so is that, well, that would be a common one then.
Yeah, it's pretty common.
And where else in a city would you find them?
A lot of times you'll see something magnetic under a bench, although that can be a little risky depending on the bench and how exposed it is. You'll see them hanging in trees a lot too. Evergreens are popular because they don't lose their leaves, right, in the winter, so they provide reasonable cover all year round. But you can get away with hiding them in deciduous trees as well. You just have to get a little creative.
Yeah, or if you find a hole in the tree.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, the other thing you might see in terms of urban hides is on fences. Again, magnetic is often a trend for urban hides, but there are other ways to go about it. The other thing that I really enjoy is finding a way to cleverly conceal something in a way that looks like it's part of whatever item it's hidden on, so it's really well camouflaged and tricky to find.
Yeah, so maybe paint?
Yeah, so like a bench with a hollow tube. Maybe you put something in the end of the tube, and at first glance, it doesn't look out of the ordinary, but if you pull on it, it'll come right out, and there's your container. Things like that.
So if you're a beginner, where's the best place to start geocaching?
Yeah, you should go to geocaching.com or download the geocaching app available for iOS or Android and create an account. You can start for free. If you're using an app, there are some restrictions for the free style account. You can sign up for a premium account. I think it's $35 a year, somewhere in that range. And just open the app and see what's around. And there's a really good chance, if you're in a more populated area, that there's going to be a cache very close to you, maybe within easy walking distance.
Very cool. Susan in Middleton has something for us. Let's go to Susan. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I'm new to geocaching. My girlfriend got me into it. She had a knee replacement a few months ago and either needed to do physical therapy or something else to get active. And she started geocaching and got me doing it. But I wanted to say that I have, from Acme Wildcachers in the area, found six of your hides.
Thank you.
Thank you for hiding caches. And Larry, I also have started doing the trackable. So when I went last summer to Europe to see the land of my grandmother and grandfather in Romania and Hungary, I left a trackable geocache in each of those cities, and I noted on the website that I would like them to come back to America to me, just like my grandparents did. And you can follow the trackables, and my grandfather has made it to Central Park. He's hiding somewhere in Central Park, and my grandmother's trackable has made it to France and seems to be stuck there. So it's really fun.
Oh, that's a great story. Thank you so much for calling, Susan. Have you heard of similar stories to Susan's?
I have, yeah. So that is what a lot of people like to do, is they will give the trackable a specific mission to go to a certain country or a city, visit, and then come back to them. And while that doesn't always happen, as we talked about earlier, when it does happen, it's really cool. And I've also been able to bring a trackable back into the game. I found one probably 6 years ago or something now that had been presumed missing, and I found it and was able to get it back into circulation, and that's kind of a fun feeling too.
So it was just misplaced, or?
Yeah, probably someone logged it or put it into a cache without logging that on the website, and so it was presumed to be in someone's possession, but it wasn't. It was actually sitting in a cache, and I just happened to find it there and was able to get it logged correctly into the next cache where I placed it.
Oh, very cool. And Susan, thank you so much for calling. I'm glad you're enjoying this whole process. It sounds like a lot of fun. And I guess, you think about it, is geocaching, is it all about finding the treasure at the end, or is it more than that?
I would say it's more than that, or at least it can be more than that. You know, Mike was talking about biking as a way to cache. The caches might give you destinations to bike to, or maybe the caches are along the way to something else, right? Same thing with hiking or any other type of exploration. For me, part of what I really like about geocaching, especially in the area around here where I live, is a geocache will take me to a place that I wouldn't really have a reason to go otherwise. And oftentimes I see really interesting and cool things that I never would have seen. So I have a friend who likes to put geocaches next to artwork that is visible from the street or the sidewalk or whatever, and highlight those. And that's taken me to see a lot of these sculptures and paintings and other things that I might have missed or never had a reason to see otherwise. So that's a pretty cool aspect of geocaching.
That is very cool. Does geocaching tend to attract younger or older people? Or
It's a mix, but I would say older, and probably older than me. You know, I'm early 40s, but
yeah.
There are a lot of folks that are retired that gives them more time to cache, and so they're more prolific in the game. But I also have some friends that are younger than me that cache too. So it's a variety, and it's a good thing to do with kids. You know, I have children that are 10 and 12, and they still tolerate geocaching some of the time. So, yeah.
They haven't reached that teenage. They're almost there, though. Oh my goodness. Well, what are some good ideas for cache items?
For trade items? Mm-hmm. So I like to use little puzzle, you know, the twisted nails,
yeah,
or little move the marble through the maze only in miniature, or figurines, or bracelets. Like sometimes my daughters like to make friendship bracelets and we'll put those in caches. So really, to me, it's something that is small enough to fit into a cache, not expensive, because I don't want to spend a lot of money on things that I'm really giving away, but also not just junk, right? Something that kind of rides that line. It's interesting enough that it may interest someone. Sometimes I'll also put in items that may be more attractive to adults, like a multi-tool or a multi-part screwdriver or something like that. Those items cost a little bit more, but depending on the type of cache I'm putting out, that could also be appropriate.
Hmm. Dave in Broadhead, do you have a quick comment or question?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, are there businesses that put geocaches in their business, or, you know, other organizations that do that just to bring people in?
Yes and no. There are guidelines around commercial limitations. So you can have a cache placed at a business. Usually it's not inside, because you want it to be available most of the time. Obviously, you would need permission from the business, but that does happen. And there are also things called geotours, where there's a more official partnership, and that's where some commercial businesses are more often involved.
Oh, on that note, Carson, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for coming back and being with us again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was great.
Carson Monroe, former president of the Wisconsin Geocaching Association, and take a look at the its website if you want to learn more, for sure, because there's a lot there. Big thanks to you for listening, and to our group of people, Lee Rayburn, Jeff Robbins, Clara Neipert, and Joel Patnod, and our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller, and again, stay with us. Lots more in store.